Omaha Public Radio presents another program from Film Streams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema on Noon Forum. On today's program, we'll hear a panel discussion which followed a special screening of the 2010 documentary film When We Stop Counting, directed and produced by Brent Meyer of El Centro de las Americas and Elizabeth Reincourt of the Nebraska Department of Education, with major funding provided by the Nebraska Humanities Council. This program, presented in collaboration with the Latino Academic Achievement Council, Nebraska Appleseed, and Plain States Region Anti-Defamation League, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, August 9, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The opinions expressed are those of the panelists and do not necessarily represent those of Film Streams, KIOS-FM, or the Omaha Public School District. A decade ago, the southeastern Nebraska town of Crete was almost 90% non-Hispanic white. Today, nearly half of Crete's population is Hispanic. How that dramatic change in demographics impacted the town, and in particular its school district, is the subject of When We Stop Counting. We have the summary of the film provided by the producers. It is in our best interest to educate all children, but what happens when a small town school system suddenly becomes 50% minority? Crete Public Schools in Crete, Nebraska has an answer. When We Stop Counting follows six Hispanic high school students living their personal struggles and triumphs while bearing the pressure of their parents' backbreaking sacrifice in hopes of achieving the American dream. Administrators, faculty, and scholars examine how schools serve both students and the community, while students themselves record their own footage of experiences at school, at home, at work, and at play. When We Stop Counting humanizes the issues of education, immigration, and most importantly, our future. The members of the panel will include Kyle McGowan, superintendent of the Crete Public Schools, and Crete Public Schools High School Guidance Counselor Karen Bufink. The moderator of the discussion will be Elizabeth Reincourt, co-director of the film and a video production and multimedia specialist with the Nebraska Department of Education. The title of the film derives from a quote by Mr. McGowan. When our homecoming queen is Hispanic, when our National Honor Society president is Hispanic, when we stop counting, what's the percentage of this, what's the percentage of that, then we start to arrive. Here now to introduce the panel is Elizabeth Reincourt.
Thank you all for attending tonight and coming into a very packed house full of people. My name is Elizabeth Reincourt, one of the co-directors, co-producers, co-editors, co-cinematographers of When We Stop Counting. My co-director is also in the house, Brent Meyer, sitting right over here. With me up at the table are, as you now know, two of the stars of the film, Karen Bufink, guidance counselor at Crete High, as well as Kyle McGowan, the superintendent of the Crete Public Schools. We also. And without both of their support, this project would not have been possible in the slightest. They were excellent at letting us into their school, helping us get in touch with the right people, and introducing us to the students. We have three of them here, and if you three could stand, we have Dulce Castañeda, who is entering her senior year at Crete High. We have Francisco Padilla. And Francisco, I'd like to share, he's going to be starting at UNK on Thursday. He's moving to Kearney to start at UNK and is also a Buffett scholar. And we have Myra Mendez with us here also, who's a rising sophomore at UNK. So if we are being recorded right now for KIOS, so this is hence the microphones, and if you have any questions, we'd like to take questions, and questions for the students are welcome as well. We've got an extra mic up here so that we can put questions in their faces too. So Casey over here and I believe Hallie on the other side have microphones, so if you'd like to ask any questions about the film, the Crete schools, any questions for any of the students, please go ahead and raise your hand and somebody with a microphone will find you.
Hi, I was really surprised to hear that you were the only certified bilingual counselor in, is it Nebraska high school systems or what? Is that still true? And how could that be?
I don't know. I'm a former Spanish teacher. I taught Spanish for 22 years, Wisconsin, up in Mullen and North Platte, and then got my counseling degree. And so Crete was looking for someone, so it was very serendipitous that we were kind of a match. I don't know if there is anyone else, I don't believe so, that is bilingual. In other words, I was hired because of a desire to serve the Hispanic population as well. I work with all the ELLs and really pretty much the immigrant students or students whose parents immigrated to the country. So I do a lot in Spanish. I don't speak any, you know, I don't speak Vietnamese or anything else, but do work with those families. But as far as I know, to be a school counselor generally in Nebraska, you need to have at least 3 years teaching experience. So the more students that we get going into college, into education, having them teach in our school systems, eventually, hopefully, we will have more school counselors that are bilingual, not only in Spanish, but in other languages as well.
I'm interested in knowing how much pushback there was. I guess I'm asking the superintendent I'm talking about pushback from the community in general, maybe from parents of non-Hispanic, non-Latino students.
Well, I think, racism is alive and well everywhere in the country, and Crete is, traditionally a Czech community, just had Wilbur Czech days. But I would say that there was a strong support from strong leaders in the community. So when there was negativity, we were assured that there'd be double the amount of positive feedback. So, and I think it's something that you don't ever want to give up on or take for granted. My belief is there's just an infinite amount of more positive people than there are negative, but the negative folks seem to have a loud voice, so you just kind of have to overcome that.
This question's for Superintendent McGowan.
Well, Ken Bird, how are you?
How
doing
are you,
up
my
there?
Friend?
Annie's up there. Oh boy, okay.
Congratulations to your education community. And what message do you have for the superintendents in the state?
This is not hard. There's not really anything original that we've done. The same thing I want for my three children is the same thing that Carmen wants for Dulce and Francisco's father wants for him. So it's just making sure that we just give opportunities for these kids to excel. And again, it's hopefully we're not looking to how to categorize, other than how many kids can we get to take the ACT and go on college and be literate.
I'm just curious to know, I got the impression from the film that there was a really positive relationship between farmland and between the school. Is that something, do you happen to know, is that characteristic of a lot of towns that have a company like farmland? Is it unique?
That's a great question, because I don't think it is typical for the relationship between meatpacking plants and communities. And I think that's not typical because there's not an effort made to learn about each other. I love farmland, and I think they're a great business and a tremendously strong supporter of education. I've taken all of my administrative team through the packing plant so that there's an understanding of what that work is like. We just had a 272 staff members at a meeting today, and I asked Farmland if they could, give us some pork chops, and they did. But another example, teammates program. Things are getting a little tough in school in terms of finance, and we have a teammates program that is tremendously positive. We may have had to cut from it. Farmland came up with $50,000 to keep it going. So the money is nice, but Farmland also gives their employees time off to be mentors in our school. So I can only speak for Crete, but I couldn't be happier of having Farmland as a partner in our school.
Just curious as to how big the graduating classes are and how you happened to pick the six students that you did. It seemed like they are the cream of the crop, if it doesn't seem too obvious there. But.
Well, what was your graduating class? Was a little over 100? Myra, do you know? 115, Myra said, in her graduating class. So how we picked the six students, when Brent and I started the process of writing the grant for the film and contacting the Crete schools, we were immediately put in touch with Karen Bufink to serve as our liaison for the project, and we're actually drawn to Crete because of Karen. We had heard good things about her work and her unique status as a bilingual guidance counselor, and so we gave her a list of all sorts of things that we were interested in seeing in students, whether or not they all manifested themselves in one person or in various ones. So we were interested in birth order, like, are you the oldest? Are you the baby of the family? When did you come to the United States, or were you born here? How long have you spoken English? Were you in ELL? What do your parents do? And boys, girls, mix of ages was fine. We weren't really concerned with what grade they were in during the film. So we gave her basically this laundry list of all sorts of things we were interested in, and she gave us little bios of about 13 students. And from those, we picked the ones that are in the film. So, but they're great, aren't they? They're just great.
This is a follow-up question to one asked earlier about a pushback in terms of racism. So maybe there are situations and best practices that you just take for granted that the strong leaders did. But in Nebraska, we hear of such a strong anti-immigrant reaction among many Nebraskans. And I wonder, what are some specific examples that are best practices that you saw strong leaders do that could be replicated by other people who maybe haven't come forth and had voice in other communities, ranging from Omaha to any other town in Nebraska?
I think getting accurate information out, it is a huge advantage of being in a town of about 6,000 people and knowing a lot of folks. So I talked a little bit about this before, but some of these myths, for instance, of people not wanting to learn English or not paying taxes or really just aren't true. And so when you have venues to share facts, and it starts with us, it starts in our own school system. I just talked about, you know, if we have 272 people on staff, if they all have accurate information, that's a pretty big chunk in the community to share with. The idea that, I'll just mention the learning English. In fact, in Crete, we require kindergartners to begin a bilingual instruction. So we're teaching kindergarten through 12th graders how to speak Spanish. I have three children. Two of them have graduated. They're both bilingual. Now, my third one doesn't know English or Spanish. He's pretty good at texting. It kind of goes both ways. We would like our students to graduate really to have something special as they go out into the workforce or to college.
Well, and I think Kyle is far too humble here, because he's one of the leaders in this community that has made a huge difference. And I think it's evident in the way he speaks in the film and the attitude he's taken. And again, one of the things that Brent and I found so wonderful about Crete was seeing that, you know, here is a superintendent who's clearly a leader in the community, a strong voice in the community, and he's out there making very clear what he's doing in the schools, what he's doing in the community, and taking it in that direction. I think Professor Hammond from UNL emphasizes that same thing. It's, you know, what is your attitude, and what attitude do you as a leader bring to the rest of your community? And if you're positive about it, then that will bring more positive results. So I think Kyle's too humble. He deserves a lot of that credit, too.
I would also... I think that last week I was in a business and I was wearing a school name tag and was the recipient basically of a really very overtly racist comment about the community. And I kind of did a double take, and that was the first time in 8 years that I came across anything like that. So there is that. But it was the first time in eight years. That was really disturbing. But I didn't ignore it, and you can't change someone's mind, you know, in 15 seconds. But I did express how unpleasant the comment was, that, you know, it was not acceptable. And the good thing that happened then was that the one of the men who was dealing with this other person in the business said, "You can't talk like that here. We don't accept that. We don't put up with those kinds of comments from our clientele, and you need to stop right now." And I think that's the kind of thing, because I think in a lot of communities, there are a lot more people that do not put up with racism, but they don't say anything, or they don't challenge it when they hear it, or a neighbor says something. And so I think that's another thing that anybody can do, is to, you know, not necessarily confront someone. You don't want to create a dangerous situation, but on the other hand, you know, not to let things pass that are wrong.
Maria Luisa Gaston. I work at the College of St. Mary, and I just have to share that I am thrilled that this is the first year that we have two girls from Crete High School coming to College of St. Mary.
Good.
Very, very well prepared. Very well prepared, and I'm thrilled. I've been going to Crete for a couple of years and have met with Karen several times. I've got two questions, one for the kids, one for the students, and one for the panel. For the students, I wanted to ask them about your parents. How did you work with your parents? Because I think that is one of the hard parts that that Latino students, and I think other immigrant students, have parents want the students to go to school and to get an education, but they don't know how many times to help them. And how did you work? Do you want to share anything with us about how you work with your parents to help them help you to finish your education? And I'll just say the other question, and then we can. And for the panel, for the school, did you have any kind of training or workshops for the faculty and the staff to help them to understand, to welcome, to learn cultural competence, to be able to grow with the growing diversity?
All right, I guess I will go ahead and start. As far as working with my parents, they've been very supportive throughout all of elementary school, middle school, and high school now. And especially now, they're really pushing me about getting down on where I want to go to college and what I want to do. And I know my mom's been really pushing me about it. I have no idea what I want to do yet. And it's starting to stress me out a little bit, but it's just been the support that they've given me. I know that they don't exactly have the higher education that they would like, so that they could help me in my studies if I ever have questions about it. But, I mean, the support that they give me is more than enough. I'm very appreciative of everything that they've done. And, you know, going to the Crete public school system was a great decision that they made, because it's obviously been very successful and has helped me a lot. So.
Well, my parents have been very supportive too. My mom has been like, during my senior year, she was really pushing me like to apply for scholarships and get those A's and B's, and I did. So, thanks to my parents, I got there. And my mom's like, my parents are really excited that I'm going to be moving to Kearney next week, so that's good.
I remember when I was in high school, 2 years ago. Gonna be a sophomore at Kearney, but the hardest thing for me when I was in high school, my parents, was getting them to understand the cultures of, like, how different school is here than what they were when they were in Mexico. For example, the extracurricular activities, they didn't have that over there in Mexico. And they're like, why are you doing this? Why are you joining that? Is it necessary? And I always had to try to make them understand somehow that it was important for me to not just only get the grades. I also needed to go out in the community and with the, get involved with the school. So that was probably how I had to work with my parents and just get them to understand the difference.
Someday I'm going to hire Myra. Hopefully just 2 years. I can wait three if it takes three. We have, 10 years ago was really a major influx in terms of new families coming to the school. And we spent a lot of time bringing in experts from, you know, around the country to tell us the secrets of how to teach to limited English speakers, of which, by the way, there's really no pixie dust out there. Good instruction is basically good instruction. You can draw a few more pictures and maybe repeat yourself a few more times and that sort of thing. But we went through the process, and I think probably what I would say, there were two, if we're talking about training teachers, there were two activities that I thought had the biggest impact and will need repeated at some time. But several years ago, we had received a grant that if our teachers participated in learning Spanish and not only learn the language, but then also learn about the culture, their reward was to go to Costa Rica for 2 weeks and be immersed. Yeah, go figure. We had a lot of people sign up for that, me included, which was particularly embarrassing because I was the worst Spanish speaker out of the entire community of Crete. But and my wife can attest to that because she was with me in Costa Rica. And just to let you know, in Costa Rica, everybody speaks Spanish. I thought everybody spoke English everywhere, and that's not true. So what we learned on that trip was really more than just how to speak Spanish, was an idea of how difficult it is to learn a new concept in another language. I mean, it's one thing to learn a language, but to learn science or history. And so there became a real empathy from our teachers of how challenging that was for our students, something that would not have been learned unless they experienced it themselves. So that was a huge change for us. The other piece was, you could kind of feel this tone of, how are these kids getting to Crete, Nebraska? You know, they're coming from Guatemala and El Salvador and Honduras and Mexico and Peru. And, you know, it's difficult and it's hard to pronounce their name. Apparently we can pronounce, Tverdi and Prochaska and things, but Gonzalez is a little more difficult. So what we did was we through our connections and through a lot of trust, we brought in several parents and had them speak to us and a couple kids actually of how they got to Crete, Nebraska. And we went through a lot of Kleenex because there was just parents trying to find a better lives for their kids.
I was surprised to hear that Crete is a multicultural community. So I guess maybe one question is if you have a perspective how that came about, and I would assume that's kind of unique for small town Nebraska. And I'm wondering if that's maybe part of the reason for the success of the Hispanic communities, whatever figures into there being multicultural there. But.
Well, a lot of the immigrants, I think, started coming in the early 90s were Vietnamese, is that mm-hmm. correct, coming to mm-hmm. farmland. And then quite a few of the families stayed, but also a number did leave. And then as they started leaving, a lot of Hispanics started coming. But we have students in the schools from China. We just have two little gals from Thailand coming, Eastern Europe, Russia we've had, South America, Central America, the Philippines. I mean, really all over the world. So it isn't just Hispanics, although that is obviously the largest minority. So I think it started kind of slow, and then it's, you know, then it got bigger. But actually, a lot of the immigrants coming in now are not Hispanic. They're starting to come from other places. But I think it's kind of interesting, because if you look at some of the immigration patterns of some of the communities across the central United States, in Iowa and Kansas, Nebraska, some of these places, a lot of times families will come to join families. So Marco mentioned in the film, he talked about coming from an area in Mexico, San Jose and Serrano. And you almost can call Crete little San Jose Serrano, because there are so many families now coming from that particular area, and you'll kind of see that all over other places. It might be Somali families, you know, it just depends. So I think we've had, because of the success, you know, the word sort of has spread, so you have a lot of people coming in into the community that way also.
Demographically, though, if you're a lot of little towns in Nebraska are, you know, basically losing population. If they're gaining population, it would tend to be Hispanic families.
You said you have many, many different representatives from different countries. I was wondering if in the lunchroom which is very interesting, do they tend to mix together, or are they segregated as they stay in the lunchroom?
Dulce, do you want to answer that? We're going to have Dulce answer. She's actually in the lunchroom.
Yeah, I guess you could say in the lunchroom, I think everyone mixes. You see all different kinds of colors sitting at one table. It's great. I know, especially my group of friends, I have an Asian friend, African-American friend, me. I used to have a Russian friend, and, of course, Caucasian friends. So it's just very multicultural at my lunch table, and it's great because we talk about a whole bunch of different things, and, you know, you just get a lot of different perspectives on what they think of certain things, and you know, we just talk about everything. I think it's great.
I have a question for the filmmakers, actually. First of all, congratulations. I know how hard you worked on this. But what do you want to see happen with this film? What's the next step for you? What's the next step for this film?
Well, thank you, first of all. I would... Basically, our hope is just to have it seen as much as possible. I have been spending time, because I work for the Nebraska Department of Education, I've been very thankful to the Commissioner of Education for supporting the film, for one, and supporting me traveling with the film to screenings like this, but also to screenings in schools, with communities, with groups of high school students, groups of teachers. And so... for it to be a piece for a conversation starter. I hope that that happens not only in our state, but also hopefully nationally. We do have the film broadcasting on NET2, so that's a step. We'd love to go national with it, so if anybody's friends with any distributors who would like to get this film shown on PBS nationally, get in touch. But more than anything, you know, for it to have as broad an audience as possible, I think the stories of the students are so helpful in growing an understanding of the way that our fellow Nebraskans live. And I think that was our ultimate goal, was to be able to grow that understanding, to make it real and not simply an issue that becomes a headline, but it's real. They're real people. We have real lives, and we interface with one another. And so my hope is that it continues to serve that function. And on that note, if you have community groups or are part, or I know that a lot of people here are from schools in Omaha. If you have groups of teachers or staff or students who want to get together or do a screening, please get in touch with me, because the department has been supportive of me going out and facilitating screenings. So let me know.
Hi, Elizabeth.
Hi.
This is Ann McShane.
Hi, Ann McShane.
With a haircut. I just want to know, sort of follows up on that question, what kind of feedback you've gotten from educators around the state, and if anybody outside Nebraska has seen the movie, if anyone has shown interest in talking to your friends there about trying to start stuff in their own school or what?
I have the feedback from school districts, and I've shown it to school districts from South Sioux City, who, interestingly enough, was one of the schools that I know Kyle got in touch with when their changes started happening in Crete. South Sioux City had seen some of those demographic changes a few years before. So now they're circling back around and seeing, you know, it's school districts learning from one another on what works, what can we do better. So I've been to several districts. I've been to schools in Lincoln and in Kearney. And where else? I've to several places, but again, the interest in being just sort of, well, the question, the first question of the night about Karen Bufink really being the only bilingual guidance counselor in the state, I think that was an eye-opener to a lot of people. A lot of schools are thinking maybe that's something they should try. So, which means, though, that we need to grow more people who are certified teachers who are also interested in being certified guidance counselors. So there's an interest in that. I do have, by wonderful coincidence, a good friend who's traveling cross country, who just happened to be coming through Omaha tonight, who is en route from New York to LA, who had seen the film before and gave me feedback on things like, you need to explain what farmland is, because if you're not from Nebraska, I can't figure out what this is. I figured it out partway through, but I've had a few people from out of state see it, but overall, the mechanisms for getting it out to broader audiences nationally have not really fallen into place at this point in time. But that's not necessarily a bad thing yet, because it's nice to cultivate it locally and sort of learn what the feedback is locally and regionally.
In Omaha, families and some schools have had to face the effects of family members being detained and deported by ICE. And I'm wondering if that has been occurring in Crete, and if so, how? What has been the impact on the schools in particular?
It's hard. That's probably to have. I've had students deported. Great, great kid that graduated about 4 years ago, wanted to be a history teacher. Anyway, it ended up, won't go into a story, but he will be deported probably in a few months in the spring. He'll take voluntary deportation. Someone turned him into ICE. Great, great kid. I've had, well, other students deported. I've had their parents deported. Kids whose parents have been taken off out in handcuffs. Sent away. It's really, really hard. We have a lot of mixed families, where some families, as you probably know, a lot of you, some are legal, some are not, some are in the process, and it's not easy. It's very, very hard. It impacts the adult who is left behind. It impacts the children. So I deal with counseling for those kinds of things. I'm primarily based at the high school. But on occasion, I have gone into the middle school, or could go into the elementary, just to talk sometimes to kids when a parent is taken away. And it's never easy, and it happens. Yeah.
I was jealous to hear that the Crete School District has bilingual education starting in kindergarten. I didn't get that here in Omaha. Kind of building on that, the programs that you're talking about sound great. Is the impetus coming from the school itself and you're supporting the programs, or is there any additional involvement from school boards or the Department of Education? Are they helpful, not helpful, et cetera?
Well, thanks for the opportunity to give kudos to my school board, because maybe they'll listen to this and say the superintendent's saying good things about them. But actually, it's very true. I mean, if I don't have the school board supporting this, it's not going to happen. And I would also say, very honestly, NDE is a huge support. The programs that CREATE puts into place are out there for everybody. It's just a matter of accessing them. We have the advantage of having an at-risk population, if you will, that lends itself to get a lot of these grants. But something that we say at CREATE a lot is that we serve the whole family. And when you look at students that come in behind, and typically they're behind because they just haven't had, you know, educational opportunities, they can't catch up if they're spending the same amount of school as Kyle McGowan's kid, because Kyle McGowan's kid, you know, got going right away in CREATE and with the school system. So we serve about 180 preschoolers. At the board meeting Monday night, the board asked me, you know, how many kids do we have on a waiting list and for preschool, because they'd like to serve them all. But we're a little short on space. We have, you know, a dozen sections of adult ed classes, because we think if the parents are speaking English and the parents are educated, that's a good role model for their kids, and that helps. We have before and after school programs. We just received a major grant, about $196,000, to extend that program to the middle school. We have, I talked to you about teammates. We have 650 kids that are elementary, and that's K through 4. 96% of those parents showed up for parent-teacher conferences. Now, part of that's because Dulce's mom's calling them, tell them, here at CREATE, you come to parent-teacher conferences. And people like that. They, you know, they don't get it at first, because they're not used to that. But as soon as you share it with them, it's great. I'd love to come. And, you know, we had 24 translators, of which Farmland provided about a half a dozen. And so there's a lot of things going on. But, again, I wish I could say we're being original, but we're just, you know, taking what's out there.
But I do have to say, reiterate what Elizabeth said, that it's top down, the school board, and then with Kyle, that comes down and it goes into all the schools. Our kindergarten principal and assistant principal, before the start of the school year, they visited this weekend. They visited, 147 homes. Now, a lot of these they don't speak English in these families. It doesn't matter. They visit the home of every incoming kindergarten student, just to welcome them.
And out of the 147, they actually talked to all but about five kids. And then they stopped at Dairy Queen and they found two kids that they didn't know about. So I told them, no more stopping at Dairy Queen. But that's a record number for us. Now, you know, that's been done before. Good principals do that. We have great principals. But it carried on to our middle school principal. He thought, why don't I go visit all the fifth graders? And so those fifth graders had a surprise when their principal showed up. And I think they only got about 70% of those guys, but they'll do better next year, I think. So,
all right. We've got about 10 minutes left.
The film alluded to farmland a fair bit in support to the schools, and also indicated a partnership with Tabitha Healthcare. What kind of support are you getting from some of the other bigger employers? I realize there aren't a lot of big employers, but you have Friskies, CREATE Mills, Walmart. I am from the area.
I was going to say, you know a little bit about CREATE. except it's Nestle's now. Mm-hmm. It's not Friskies. But Nestle's is a dog food, but its parent company is the chocolate. I wish we had the chocolate. I don't have any pets. Nestle's, I talked to you about not having enough space. I was at a meeting with Greg Heiser, who's a plant manager. I told him that you know, I'm going to be looking at buying a used portable from Lincoln. He says, you know what, Kyle, we have one back here. We're thinking about getting rid of it. You come get it, and you can have it. Well, that was, you know, about a $12,000 savings for us, so that was that kind of support. Walmart was just at our meeting and gave out $300 worth of gift cards to our teachers as well as some other things. We enjoy tremendous support. And believe me, I like the money, but it sometimes is more important to get the active involvement. So I like to see those employees and those managers in the school. And you know what? They like coming to school. School's a fun place to be. So we're very lucky in that way. Doane College is also there. We're very fortunate. But we don't take it for granted. I mean, those people just don't show up and knock on your door. They like to be invited.
Just curious if there is any plans for a follow-up in 5 years. It would be interesting.
That was a planted question to the students. Throughout the filming, we gave very little guidance to the students in terms of what to do with their cameras at first and kind of just let them run free, doing whatever they wanted with the mandate to just film your life. But then at certain times, we did give them sort of sheets of questions to set up their camera and ask themselves. And so at the end of the school year, we did plant the question, what would you think about doing this kind of thing again in 5 years? We do plan to keep in touch and hopefully do some sort of follow-up. So we are now 1 year after the, or almost really close to 1 year after the completion of the film. So a couple more years left until that comes along, but we do intend to stay in touch and do a follow-up, whether it's feature length or short, don't know yet, but we do intend to be in touch. And I thank the students for a year later still subjecting themselves to coming and watching themselves on a big screen again.
Yes, as a professor of health education, I first of all congratulate you on all the things you're doing. I was just wondering what you have in the way of health education classes. For example, there were two pregnancies. They may have been wanted pregnancies, but I'm just wondering what kinds of education is going on there.
Well, we do have a mandatory health education class that every student has to take before they graduate. So I think that's helpful. And for the girls that, you know, do get pregnant, we have a phenomenal teen parent program that was created, which really offers a lot of support. So virtually the teen parents, whether they're boys or girls, get the encouragement that they need so that they can graduate, they can get childcare. So it really is phenomenal, you know, in that aspect. But all the students do get health education at the high school for a semester.
But it's kind of an interesting question because about 3 years ago, there seemed to be, for us, somewhat of an explosion of some teen pregnancies. And again, there's grants out there of which you can access to make sure that these girls get a high school diploma. But you have to have a board that's willing to, it's not always politically correct to have a teen parent program. And so we did start a program to make sure that these children, were healthy and the girls finished their diploma. And then we kind of looked into, do we need some more education? And it was kind of interesting because at least for our data, it was not necessarily, bad prom dates. It was planned pregnancies. So that's what it is. Now, we didn't do anything different in our curriculum, but all of a sudden our teen pregnancies took a big drop. So I don't know. What I am interested in is, making sure that our kids understand the consequences of their actions. And I think, school superintendents and teachers have been trying to do that for many decades, and sometimes we're more successful than others. All right. But regardless of the consequences, you're not we're not helping anybody if we don't have an educated community.
All right. I think we're going to have time for just about one more question. But before I take that, just wanted to mention, I know we did unfortunately have to turn some people away tonight. There is going to be another screening in Omaha at the Jewish Community Center on September 14th. And Kyle and I will both be there after the film to facilitate a discussion. So the Anti-Defamation League, again, is sponsoring that. So if you can, you can check out their website or be in touch. And I think there may be a poster in the lobby as well. So if you had friends who couldn't make it in or have neighbors and friends you want to tell to go, there's another screening coming up in Omaha. So.
Hello, Elizabeth.
Hi.
Excellent work. As a, I've got a couple of, well, one question and an observation as an amateur student of human nature. Kyle, your last name escapes me, so I'm going to call you Kyle. I love the fact that in every question that you answered in the film and in every question that you've answered and statement that you've made here on the panel, you've always come across as not having a particular agenda, but rather being very practical. And I think as a human nature is such that when someone comes across as having an agenda, first and foremost, people tend to put up their psychological defenses. And I think part of the success of your leadership is from the fact that it, you do come across as very pragmatic, practical, with a bottom line people orientation and not having an agenda. And I very much commend that. My question to the students is, I heard many of you and your other students frequently reference expectations of your parents, and I do believe that people rise or sink to the expectations of the people in the community around them. And I wanted to ask, how much of a of an expectation, what expectations were you rising to, and how much of an expectation did having that camera create? And last but not least, I'd like to remind the three students in the room that you now have some very high expectations from over 200 people in the theater. So please be rising to those expectations.
With me being the oldest of my family, I know the expectations are still high as I'm in college. My parents are always constantly still reminding me that I need to do better and I need to set the example for my two younger brothers. When I was in high school, they would ground me if I had a C. They were those strict parents that they expected nothing but good of me, and they did the, they had a attitude towards, if you don't do this, you're not going to get this, the whole reward system. And
so what was it like when you got a camera? What was the expectation then that you, what did that, what that make you do?
Well, the expectation with the camera, I can't, it just showed the way I was already. I've always been that one student that just gets involved and maybe I overdo it, but the camera was just there kind of pointing it out, I guess. Yeah.
Well, my parents have had high expectations for me. The first one being just graduating from high school and now going to college. And with the camera, probably pushing it a little more. So, because if there's going to be a five-year follow-up and I'm out in the streets, it's not going to be good. So, yeah.
I guess as far as expectations, like I said earlier, my parents have always pushed me, but it, from them, I don't think I've gotten the feeling that I have, I'm punished if I don't do it well. It's more of like an inner motivation thing, I guess I would say. I think as I've seen my brother, as I said, or you saw earlier, he's in the Marines, and now my sister's in, out in Kearney, and so I just think the expectations get higher, and like I guess I feel the pressure, but yeah, I think a lot of it comes from myself and definitely a lot from teachers as well. I think they've all been very supportive throughout my education. And as far as the camera, Yeah, I guess I would definitely have to agree with Francisco on that. It definitely does not end here. And yes, that's...
yes. Yeah, and I think... And to speak for a couple of the students who aren't with us tonight, and I know a couple of you have said this too, that it was kind of this realization that after we had the premiere of the film, kind of seeing it all like, oh, like people are going to recognize me now. And if I don't do the stuff I said I was going to do, people might ask me about it. So I think there was definitely, and as filmmakers, I think Brent and I kind of saw a shift in during the course of the school year. And I think to point out, in Sonia, maybe was the biggest transformation in terms of realizing that she had been given a podium by being given a camera and asked to tell us about her life. There was a distinct moment in the spring where when she moved to Tobias and she had this new house and she was setting up her tripod and interviewing herself in her kitchen. And, you know, I mean, she says it in very distinct language in the film, like, I am doing this project for a reason. Like, I get it. You've given me a tool and I am going to tell the world what my life is like and, you know, learn about it. So I think... And I think, you know, that goes for all of the students. But I think in her case in particular, that became very evident. And I think sort of on a personal note as a filmmaker, I think it's so incredibly powerful for people to be able to tell their own stories. And that's why I've been drawn to documentary, is to facilitate that, as editing it, bringing the tools to the table to help that happen. So...
You know, something I just want to add, because I know we're closing this down, but I see Brent back there and Elizabeth, and when they first came to see me, I don't think I was very welcoming, because I was very suspect of sometimes the gentleman talked about agendas. You know, we're close to Lincoln. We have lots of folks that want to come down and, you know, do research and work on their thesis with us, and... you know, I'm fine if people are coming in open-minded, but I'm not looking for already someone else's agenda and us to be used. And it couldn't be happier, of course, of how things turned out. Had no idea what was going to turn out of this, but I really thought they told a great story. So did a good job.
Thank you all for staying and for your questions. Thank you so much to FilmStreams for having us, and to the ADL and Appleseed and Black for sponsoring.
You've been listening to a special program on Noon Forum. We've heard a panel discussion which followed a special screening of the 2010 documentary film, When We Stop Counting, directed and produced by Brent Meyer of El Centro de las Americas, and Elizabeth Reincourt of the Nebraska Department of Education, with major funding provided by the Nebraska Humanities Council. The event took place at FilmStreams, Omaha's nonprofit cinema. This program, presented in collaboration with the Latino Academic Achievement Council, Nebraska Appleseed, and Plain States Region Anti-Defamation League, was recorded by Omaha Public Radio on Tuesday evening, August 9, 2011, for broadcast at this time. The members of the panel have included Kyle McGowan, superintendent of the Crete Public Schools, and Crete Public Schools High School Guidance Counselor Karen Bufink. The moderator of the discussion was Elizabeth Reincourt, co-director of the film and a video production and multimedia specialist with the Nebraska Department of Education. They were joined by three present or former Crete High School students featured in the film, Dulce Castaneda, beginning her senior year at Crete High School, as well as two Crete High School graduates, both now attending the University of Nebraska at Kearney, Myra Mendez and Francisco Padilla. Special thanks to Rachel Jacobson, Casey Logan, Hallie Sharkey, and Jim Foyt of FilmStreams for helping to make the recording and broadcast of this program possible. Complete Noon Forum listings, as well as an archive of previous broadcasts, are available on our website, kios.org. Now, this is your producer and host, Bob Cote, thanking you for listening.